Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 20th, 2016. Staying completely out of anything political tonight. There's typhoons in the Pacific, many of them, too many to count almost. I'm going to be talking mainly about cyber security tonight. It's a topic I happen to know quite a bit about, having worked in that industry for 25 years of my life, having built international secure networks with a company that I worked for, and also managing secure networks for, in the cumulative total number of years as an engineer, 25 years. So, not the least of which is my breaking of the RSA codes, which were used for encryption with my prime number work. So anyway, I'll be talking about that and the absolute devastation that's going on in the United States. Your computers are being hacked. The government, the DNC, Target, you know, everybody is being hacked. Everybody and their brother. And there's a reason for this. I have a book called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. It goes into this. It shows collusion between the government and private industry, where in one case, the NSA paid a company building encryption codes for companies that were selling this as the premier encryption firewall product, selling the back door to the NSA. But there are other factors involved. For example, a solar wind surge called a CME, coronal mass ejection, or other solar flaring, which could affect the power grid and electrical devices or EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, and these could be from naturally occurring events or it could be from man-made events, such as, well, there's all kinds of sources for this, not the least of which could be somebody playing with the power grids. And there's be many techniques. I'm really not going to describe all the different techniques on the air as to give people ideas on how they could do this. But there would be multiple forms. The most publicly announced type of EMP would be from a nuclear weapon, a small dosage nuclear weapon in which you would get an EMP pulse and could knock out electronics, grids, etc. So anyway, I'll be talking about that. But that has to do with cybersecurity also. They're all related issues. First of all, I'll just mention a few of these things. I got an email in. They're saying that Venus, billions of years ago, was a habitable planet. And that they make estimates. This is at NASA. They're saying that due to runaway greenhouse calculations, they retro-calculate and say that Venus could have been a habitable planet. And they don't talk about how it got this massive CO2 atmosphere, where it came from. Once again, just taking one thin vein of thought that somehow it was this lush water planet. See, the problem with that theory is that Venus does not have any tectonic plates. When a planet cools down, it's going to basically shrink a bit. When that happens, because the heat makes things expand, and on a global scale, it's going to be larger than when it's cooler. So as the planet cools, it's going to develop cracks and develop plates, etc., you know, just like Earth has. So Venus does not have any continental plates at all. It's basically a molten surface. And, yeah, as far as NASA's concerned, people were walking around on Venus and having lunch, you know. I just can't stand it. I mean, pure fairy tale science and, of course, being published in peer-reviewed journals. There's a story that this week the Schiaparelli spacecraft of the European Space Agency and joint effort between Roscosmos, the Russian cosmonaut or space agency, basically private space agency, is in a joint effort, and they're landing the Schiaparelli spacecraft on Mars. And so the idea is that there's two parts to this. One is to study the exosphere of Mars, meaning the region around Mars, the atmosphere and the space around Mars. And they're looking for traces of methane. Now, in 2014, the NASA Curiosity rover discovered a spike in the methane reading. And NASA says, oh, that's due to life on Mars. Anyway, no, it's not due to life on Mars. Methane, and this is something, too, that people look for water and oxygen around exoplanets. These are planets that are not in our solar system. They're not in our solar system. They're around other star systems. But they thought if you could find water, that would prove that there could be life there. And what they're finding is, no, water is all over the place and is not related to life. It could be. And the same with methane. Methane has many, many natural sources, not the least of which is the formation of molecules in the atmospheres coming in just as the comets are all, or the planets are all acting as comets. So a spike in methane could be nothing more than the planet passed through a charge distribution, it discharged that, and you had an influx of local molecules in that region of the solar system. Or it could be from volcanic activity, or it could be from vents in the ground. Mars' surface is a bit geologically active. Or maybe they think there's cows on Mars now. I'm not sure. But interestingly enough, there's a lander that goes along with this. And they're going to look for electric fields. Good grief. Apparently, they have discovered, or maybe read my work, I should say, that the surface of Mars has electrical conditions, and these are ionospheric conditions, the same thing I've been talking about for, since 1979, and atmospheric electricity, etc. And the ionosphere of Mars is active just like Earth's, and it's caused by the same thing. Mars is discharging the solar capacitor, which creates ionospheric bands. They're co-rotating around Mars and create a very slight magnetic field. The thing is, Mars does not have a core geomagnetic field like Earth does to solidify and to build up the magnetic field, coupling with the geomagnetic field and the plasma magnetic fields. And plus, Mars has a very thin atmosphere. It doesn't have a moon, which drives a plasma magnetic field. So all the conditions on Earth are very different, but it still has that vertical electric field in the atmosphere, which creates tornadoes, dust storms of incredible size and scope. It creates hurricanes, something that NASA cannot figure out, how you have hurricanes on Mars when there's no warm water. And so anyway, they are magically, all of a sudden in the year 2016, thinking about electric fields causing weather on Mars. So this is right out of my work, 100%. And so they're off to see the wizard in the wonderful Wizard of Oz, talking about electric fields. Isn't that special? And by the way, the Mars MAVEN mission, which is a NASA 2 spacecraft mission, arrived, remember, a couple years ago, just before the Siding Spring Passage, which was a small comet that passed Mars. And they got the MAVEN mission there just in time to see the atmospheric conditions of this passing comet. And of course, the whitewashed media puts this complete spin up as if this was this little snowball coming by Mars, when in actuality it was a discharge of the solar capacitor, was a comet, and it had tremendous effects on the atmosphere of Mars, not the least of which was the buildup of quite a few heavy nuclear radioactive elements that came into the atmosphere of Mars. And how do you get that out of an ice ball? You know, it's just silliness. But they continue on this, and now they're, of course, that was NASA. This is the European Space Agency, who has discovered, and there's got to be internal talk within the European Space Agency, that comets are not dirty snowballs. They saw electrical effects around Comet 67P with the Rosetta mission, and now they're looking for electric fields around the surface of Mars. And, of course, they realize that if you're going to send people to live on Mars, then they're going to have to deal with all these conditions. Mars is a much less forgiving environment than Earth, where we have a big geomagnetic field that blocks the solar wind, that blocks cosmic rays. We have an atmosphere that is very much protecting. It stops the UV light high up in the atmosphere. We have an ozone layer which blocks UV light. The X-rays don't make it from outer space down to Earth. So we have a very nice controlled climate in terms of radiation and space radiation on the surface of the Earth, but Mars doesn't have any of that. I should mention also that the moon is now, they understand that there's the same type of electrical process going on the surface of the moon, but of course they don't understand any of this. They don't understand where the electric fields come from. They are still using sputtering and ultraviolet light from the sun ionizing things, but it doesn't cut it. It doesn't explain what you see. Because a lot of these electrical effects are occurring on the night side of the planets, not the day side where the sunlight is, but on the nighttime side. So at any rate, a lot of goofiness going on there, but it'll be interesting to see. And of course, all of these journals are controlled and the referee systems are controlled. So as has gone on for, 35 years, no work of mine is going to be allowed into the so-called respectable peer-reviewed journals. But all my work is published. All my work is on radio shows. You can listen to it where I describe, I've talked about the surface of Mars for years and electrical conditions and the tornadoes being electrical, the hurricanes, and, on and on. So, at any rate, during the European Space Agency Rosetta mission, I attempted to communicate with their lead scientists there, and they don't even respond. They don't even respond. They're just too important, even though they were measuring directly that this Catherine Atwood, I think is her name, head of the European Space Agency Rosetta mission, I wrote to her and I said, where are you measuring the species of various volatiles like carbon dioxide and things like that? And she said 10 and 100 kilometers away from the nucleus. So I said, you're not measuring them at the nucleus. And of course she never responded. The point being that none of this stuff is coming off the nucleus. The various, because at a distance you can see the comet tail, no question about it. And it's got all the various species, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, ammonia, water, H2O, etc., and a laundry list of hydrocarbons. But when you look at the nucleus, you get right up there with your spectrometer, and you go, okay, now you can tell these out a distance from the nucleus where it's very faint. So if all of this tail material is supposedly coming off the nucleus, it would be far more concentrated and detectable at the nucleus, coming off the nucleus, but they don't see any. So, all quiet on the Western Front. Nobody's saying a word. But they're looking for electric fields, and they're trying to figure this out. They're all scratching, their nose and other body parts trying to figure this out. Not having a lot of success because they're strapped to ancient, archaic, outdated. Fairy tale science is the best word I can think of to describe it. But what's interesting is that the news media, first of all, doesn't know how to ask an intelligent question. Second of all, they are, you know, purposefully stupid because they realize there's certain things they just can't talk about. If it doesn't come from NASA or the European Space Agency, better not talk about it. Just report what they tell you, because if not, you could lose your contact and then no more nice glossy magazine to sell to you, the public. Just a quick mention, this week, excuse me, on my paid cast, this is a topic that I had been waiting to put out for a long time. And I've been building up in previous weeks, giving the physics of Tesla, basic physics. Last week I talked about, on the paid cast, I talked about Tesla's death ray. But there was a secret weapon that Tesla had. And that was at the time when he died, or allegedly died, and they cleaned out his New Yorker hotel room of all his paperwork, etc. And the only reason we know about this is because of this woman reporter. She went in the day before Tesla died, or allegedly died. She had an interview, and she was there almost all day with him, a very long, extensive interview. She was there during his lunch. She described him eating, weighing out meticulously his food and eating it. Tesla was a very meticulous person. And then he talked about his science and various things. But at the end of the conversation, this was January 6th, 1943, he told the woman, he said, "Well, you're lucky we're here today, because tomorrow I'm going to be gone. I'm leaving with some British dignitaries." And I know now that he was closing a deal with the British government to sell his secret defensive weapon technology. And they have tried to pawn off that his death ray was his defensive technology. Not true at all. The death ray, which I described last week on my paid cast, the physics of the death ray, can very much be used for an offensive weapon. Any offensive weapon can also be used as a defensive weapon, but he had a strictly defensive weapon, and that is the topic that I give on this week's paid cast. Next week, the 27th of October, my paid cast will be on space radiation, what NASA is not telling you. So anyway, I encourage you to go to the webpage, sign up for the paid cast. It allows me to do a deep dive into these scientific topics every week. And this week, I'll be talking about cybersecurity on this social. Every week, you get a double dose of fairly significant scientific or mathematical analysis of current topics, more current topics, current events. The reason I'm talking about cybersecurity on this show is because of all of the allegations that Russia has been allegedly hacking into domestic U.S. servers, military, etc., the DNC, and they want to start World War III over this. Well, the reality is Homeland Security is completely incompetent. They're supposed to be in charge of protecting our borders. And just like the Mexican border or anything else, they're a sieve. So cybersecurity for your home computer, for the government, for business, is a joke. And so, anyway, that's why I'm talking about cybersecurity on this show this week. But I encourage you, like I say, for the paid cast. And also, just a quick note, during these rather difficult times and due to all of the news media covering so many things, I see this in other talk show hosts also when I'm on shows or I listen to talk shows. All of the talk shows out here are getting below normal sales. Everybody's waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so if you see fit, and if you're looking for water filter products, or you're kids are homeschooled, or if you have college students that are looking for textbooks that are real textbooks about the workings of the cosmos, or my Recalendar Sunstar clock, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, scroll down, Join the paid cast. It's only $3.95 a month, less than a cup of coffee. And look at what you're getting. Four or five lectures. Okay, I'm not going to go on and on about that. But just go there if you have water filter products you want to buy. And hopefully this lull will terminate here as soon as the election is over. Maybe we can get back to normal if we don't have World War III first. There are a number of major typhoons moving through the Pacific. Sarika, Haima, what was the other one? Begins with a P, I forget. But many typhoons over the last few weeks, some of them claim to be the strongest, biggest, strongest typhoons, or hurricane is just another name for a typhoon. They're all cyclonic storms, and they're all driven by electricity from the ionosphere. But hitting the Philippines, the China coast, other locations, I think Manila was in on one of them, just a tremendous amount of hurricane activity. We have been getting some strong solar wind activity, so I'm assuming that is the direct cause of the energy sources for these typhoons. And literally in the last week, three major typhoons in the Pacific. So, in fact, I have not had time to look at all the details on that. I've been busy with other things. It's like I am the eternal plate juggler, trying to jug many things all at once. But so into the discussion of cybersecurity, and this is an interesting play off of political issues that are going on in the world, and you can see how science and cybersecurity and all of these topics kind of mix into the real world. But this past week, Obama signed a presidential directive for preparedness against space weather events. And it was simply stated like that, space weather events, which would imply various things. And at the end of that list of things, he listed affecting the power grid. Now, understand that I have been saying for a long time that when the real chips are down, when the hits the fan, these people will pull the power grid because it's the way, and I've been saying this for years, they have been pumping up NASA, trying to talk about solar flaring, how it could bring down the solar grid. For a long time, I'd been a guest on the Coast to Coast AM show, and they would call me in for an evening news spot in which they wanted me to comment on current solar flaring conditions or something like that. And George Norrie would always ask me, Jim, is this going to have an effect on the power grid or things like that? And what they were doing was prepping the public for the day when they were going to do a false flag power event, and I would always qualify it and talk about it, and that's why they stopped having me on. Now they have a bunch of shills that will say exactly what they want, like, woo, power grid outage, etc. I would always qualify it and say that the sun has been at a very low ebb for literally the last decade, more, probably 12 years, 13 years, and there's no reason to really believe that we're going to have this major 1859 type of event, Harrington type event, that's going to take out the power grid at this time. It's always a possibility. But you need a sun that is very active at the time, or something that's unplanned, like a comet coming in, a major comet, not just a little one, something that would really give us a jolt. Something I discovered in my weather work a long time ago, it's been copied by NASA, is that it's the change in the solar wind. It's the impulse. Like if you take, let's take an example of a big hammer, great big mallet, and you take and you hit something with it, you hit a target with your mallet, Okay, if you hit it harder and faster, the velocity, the change, it's literally, this is the definition of impulse in physics, is it's the change in force and how fast that force changes. It's an impulse and how quickly the energy is absorbed by the receiving target. That's an impulse. And that's why, for example, in the military, sometimes small bullets can be very damaging because of how hard they hit, how the velocity. Not that they're big shells, but they come at such a high velocity that they shock the, you know, the target or whatever. Much more effective than a big object moving slowly. And so, at any rate, it's the same is true with the solar wind. That it's the impulse. It's that rapid change that causes hurricanes, power outages, etc. A listener wrote in and sent this study. Let me see if I can quick pull it up here. It's because it's rather comical. So anyway, here's a sent in by a listener in the comment. I like the comment because my audience is very well educated. It says, from the listener, too funny, just one city can be pinpointed. I guess I need to call all my friends there right now. So the article states that they have developed a map. Scientists, whoever they are, and I'm not going to give this any fame by telling you where this appeared, but they supposedly have developed a map built using geomagnetic storm measurements and data from magnetic materials beneath the Earth, revealing Minnesota as particularly at risk of being blasted by solar material. Well, isn't that special? Don't you think that, you know, the Native Indians there would have some stories to tell about that? You know, there's some, you know, they say this stuff, but what they're alluding to is in the north central part of Minnesota, there are the Mesabi Range deposits of iron, most of which, by the way, has been dug up and excavated and shipped out of there. There's very little left now of what was there before World War I. Remember, that was J.P. Morgan who took over the Mesabi brothers, basically ripped them off from their holdings up there. He was supposed to provide them with a railway to take the ore over to Lake Superior, where then it would go on barges down to Cleveland and the Detroit, etc., to the mills, where it would be made into steel. And so he got his railway almost completed. The Mesabi brothers had their Chinese workers in there digging out the ore and getting it all ready. And then J.P. Morgan pulled the plug on them. And so they had no way to get rid of their ore. And so they ended up selling out to J.P. Morgan for pennies on the dollar, and it became known as reserve mining. And that's the same term that J.P. and the Chase boys and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds used when they called the Federal Reserve. That term reserve got kind of bantered around back then in the early 1900s. So the same people that created the Federal Reserve created reserve mining. But all of that ore, the vast majority of it, has been removed. And like I say, all that remains now is very, very low-grade ore, taconite trailings. And so there's no reason for believing that that should be a strike region for solar flare activity, because most of the ore ain't there no more. But these morons, I guess somebody forgot to mention that, so they've combined metallurgy data about the Earth, and then it says, this is from a space article in Space, it's a online space.com, it says, solar storms threaten Earth about every 100 years, and experts warn we are overdue. Well, what a completely ridiculous statement, as if this were something like a volcano going off, which do have cycles. Solar cycles are not based on a 100-year period. So who's ever putting this together is just smoking some funny weed. It says, now researchers have released the first ever map that shows which areas of the U.S. are at high risk of being hit by the next intense storm. The map was built using geomagnetic storm measurements and data from magnetic materials beneath the Earth, revealing Minnesota is particularly at risk of being blasted by solar material. And so then they say, officials warn that the massive electromagnetic pulse EMP from solar flares could cause $2.6 trillion in damages across the globe and bring an end to modern civilization as we know it. So I'm going to stop right there, because this is coming out, and it's a planted article. This is happening at the same time as Obama comes out, makes a presidential directive to prepare for a solar outage, and then, or a solar flare, which would cause a power outage. And then 2 days later, Obama says that it's imminent. Remember, it was about a year ago, congressmen were saying that a solar flare was imminent, about ready to bring down the solar grid. Let me tell you something. I studied the sun on a regular basis. The sun has never been at a lower ebb. Even the solar flare that affected us a little bit this last week, it was very minor, and the sun had no sunspots to speak of. It very quiet, very quiescent. And so there's no reason for this, but this comes at the same time as they're throwing everything in the kitchen sink on the table, because they're talking about cybersecurity and solar flares, if it took down the solar grid, could be related to our cybersecurity, obviously, because the internet would go down, telecommunications would go down, your ability to listen to me would go down, and other alternative radio shows where you get real news, and only I bet the government would have their news services up. I've always said, it's very simple, I said this a number of weeks ago, I'll say it again, you can always tell a manipulated EMP grid outage, electrical grid outage, because it will be in the targeted areas. It will be in targeted areas, and this is not the way EMPs work. EMPs typically would be very spotty in the actual grid elements that they take down. Not the case with man-made, because they want to take down cities, they want to take down centers where the telecommunication sources originate, and internet hubs, things like that, which are associated with cities. So they could selectively, block by block, or region of city, etc., take down the power grid. But this is another reason why Obama has been pushing for what they call the smart grid. It's not smart. The only smart thing about it is it can control the electricity flow to you, the end user. Every house would have a meter. Every house would be remote programmable, remote controllable. They can't do this now, because what we have is a system that was set up by Tesla really around the beginning of the 1900s, actually in the 1800s. The first use of this was, 1893 at the Chicago State Fair, where Tesla set up his electric AC power grid with the AC generators and lit it up, one of the main events of the 19th century. And this was talked about worldwide, you know, the coming age of electricity. But what Tesla did was he understood electricity, he understood EMPs, he understood the damaging effects of EMPs, and he understood about the fact that the way electricity was transmitted in his original system that he gave off to Westinghouse was through wires. And the other half of that circuit was what we call ground, literally ground, which is a huge source of electrical, in a sense, stability. But if the currents start running through the ground, that can change the potential difference or the voltage between the ground and the wires. And that's where the surge is. The surge comes through the ground, and that's the problem. So Tesla, in his wisdom, set up all kinds of checks and balances. Now, just referring to a smart grid, if you have a computer system that's looking for EMP surges, and then tries to do something about it, that EMP, electromagnetic pulse, is moving at the speed of light, either through the ground or through the wires or through the atmosphere. And it is long gone and past you by the time your computer figures out what to do and react to it. So the smart grid, in spite of the fact that they claim it would be, you know, solidify our grid system, is just hogwash. The only reason for a smart grid is, number one, so corporations could make a bunch of money off a government boondoggle project, and number two, to control electricity to you, the end user. And by shutting down electricity, they could really, really, really do a lot of damage. I don't care who you are, you use electricity. And if you don't, everybody else does. So everybody you know is going to be shut down. So bringing down the power grid is the ultimate method of controlling the public. I mean, you could poison the water, people can filter it. You could poison the food, people can still hopefully get food someplace. Shut down the power grid, and modern life as we know it would come to a halt. So, anyway, it's very interesting that all of these cover stories are coming out at the same time, and then this stupid story about a geomagnetic storm, or a space storm, electric pulse, EMP pulse, shutting down the power grid, and then targeting certain parts of the Earth. And then they claim, this is comical, they claim that they have mapped the locations on Earth where the greatest effect would be. And then they go, but the vast majority of the Earth has, they don't have data, they don't have funding to continue their study. So they really haven't completed anything. They have only have a little small percentage of the data. So anyway, it's just a bunch of garbage, but they had to get it out there in spite of the fact that the study was never completed or even close to completed. They have to put this out there to try and get something else in front of the eye of the public, this related to solar flares. So I'm fully believing that before the election, which is coming up November 8th, literally a couple weeks away, 2 weeks and a couple days away, we're going to see a full-scale power outage. They're going to blame it on either an EMP or, more conveniently, a solar flare. Because even though I can go and get satellite data and look at it and examine it to see if there really was a solar flare, most people don't have access to this. And if there's a power outage, nobody's going to have access to this kind of data. They're going to shut it down. And the only word you're going to have is that NASA is going to tell you, the authorities at NASA. Now, you're going to trust those people? Not on your life. The biggest liars. That's why NASA means never a straight answer. So anyway, on to cybersecurity, because that's all related to cybersecurity. A number of years ago, it was 2014, March 5th was the date, I released my second book dealing with prime numbers. That's the second book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. I literally showed how to break the encryption codes that are commonly used today based on prime numbers. Very easy to do, child's play. The issue of cybersecurity today is immense because the U.S. government is claiming, this is from Obama on down, it's through the security agencies, they're claiming that Russia has hacked the Democratic National Convention, which is hogwash. Everybody and their brother was in the Democratic National Convention servers. The Hillary Clinton, isn't it strange that she's coming out now tough on cybersecurity? She's the one that had a private server with no security, gave away all her national secrets. They knew about the Chris Stevens, the ambassador in Benghazi. He was killed with three other people because of her lack of security. And now she's coming out, Russia is infiltrating our cybersecurity and we're going to be tough. She's going to start a war. World War III. Oh, my God. These people are insane. The reality is cybersecurity in the United States has been non-existent. Non-existent. For when my book came out in 2007, Calculate Primes, that was released on the Coast to Coast AM radio show, I had already sent thousands of the copies of that book around the world. And it probably saved me because they knew that that book had already been purchased. I was the only person really that knew the title of the book. And George Norrie received a copy by courier delivery that morning. And so that show, I think it was May 5th, 2014, Coast to Coast AM, was to release that book. And by the time the information came out, the cyber world immediately knew that all of the cybersecurity had been destroyed. Michael Chertoff, head of Homeland Security, a number of months later, got up on a podium and said, literally, this was his words, all of our cybersecurity has been compromised. We don't know how bad it is, and we don't know how to cure it. And that was basically because throughout the history of secure computing, which, by the way, I was very much part of, I worked for a good part of my life in secure computing, building private networks for large corporations, Shell Oil, you know, the big banks, international banking systems for government, for the federal government, for state governments. And literally, we built and managed secure cyber networks for these companies. And there's a way to do it, except it's been totally lost in the, I don't know, it's like nobody can do anything anymore. When we were doing this in the 1980s, for example, we never had issues with hackers. There was nobody breaking into networks. There was never even any question that these networks were secure and unbreakable. Now, everybody and their fat Freddy brother can get into anything in the world. When they asked Julian Assange in an interview, they said, I think it was Hannity asked him, how easy is it to break into cybersecurity? And he just looked like, hey, anybody can do this. This is child's play. There's a story wherein I wrote about this in my book, RSA Code, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, where the NSA had a backdoor deal with a major corporation that was selling encryption software called RSA, is the name of the corporation. And they were selling encryption software and firewalls to corporations, stating that this was the top-of-the-line secure computing protection. And they had sold the keys to this to the NSA under the table. This actually happened. Now, the NSA also goes out to companies. And, for example, back in the day, in the mid-90s, there was a company called Heaven's Gate that was selling encryption and firewall software to companies, and the CIA could not break into it. And then, of course, the NSA existed back then. We kid around and call it no such agency, but they existed back in the early 90s. And this was part of the George Bush CIA total control, total spectrum control of information, because that's when they knew. That's another story. I'm not going to go into that, why this all of this cybersecurity came about. But that's when they started monitoring you, the public, to see what, to determine, and they would start probing. They would do activities and terrorist activity, and they would start probing and testing population centers. But anyway, the security of the computer world fell on its face May 5th, 2007, when I released my book, Calculate Primes. And I know that because next day I got calls from military personnel. I got calls from scientists and mathematicians who were working for the aerospace industry. And I worked in that industry, so I understand very well how things worked. When programmers were given a task, they were the tasks were divided up and compartmentalized so that no individual person knew all of the ins and outs. And so that program programmer would work 6 months, 12 months on his particular piece of the puzzle and would have input parameters and output parameters, then that's what he did. So he didn't know how all of this other software fit together. And so inevitably, when they dealt with encryption on inbound and outbound traffic, they would automatically use RSA encryption codes. And this went into hardware, which was hard-coded, which is even worse because you can't change it, and then into software. This went into military satellites. This went into ground hardware, computer systems, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, everybody used these. So when Chertoff got up and said, we don't know how bad it is and we don't know how to cure it, they didn't know. They literally had no idea where all of the RSA encryption code activity was in the hardware and the software and in satellites and interfacing protocols. They didn't know. They didn't have a clue because there was literally no record of where all this had been used. So they were very busy trying to put patches and front-end interfaces on all of this software. And the reason I know about that is because a friend of mine's daughter worked for the Navy, and she was in charge of building the new firewall software to try and protect what was going on with satellites and military satellites and, you know, tank hardware, everything. Everything was vulnerable at that point. And literally, they didn't know how to fix it. But then the NSA comes in, and they had already been forcing companies to comply with providing back doors that the NSA could get into any computer system, including Windows. Remember Bill Gates? Remember Bill Gates had a little legal problem up there in Washington State, up in Seattle. That's when Microsoft was based there. They were going to take Billy to court because Billy thought he was going to be independent. He was going to fight off the big bad wolf government, and he had his billions and Microsoft, and he thought they could do no harm to him. And he was going to resist allowing them back doors into Microsoft. This is back in the early 2000s. All of a sudden, Billy folds completely. And you could just see it happening. All of a sudden, he's good buddies with the Clintons. He's hanging around with the Clintons. He's hanging around with other New World Order people. He's got his billions. He gets to buy a telescope in South America that was almost completed with U.S. government funding. So he's got his own telescope. Oh, Billy Gates just had the world doors open up to him because the NSA was now able to use Microsoft to get into your computers. And it, of course, was the basis for the vast majority of secure computing, any computing, laptops, home computers, business computers, all ran on Microsoft. Very few ran on Unix or Linux or other, Apple. Very few computers ran on that. The vast majority ran on Microsoft. And by the way, that was the basis of the 2000-year cyber bug. Remember the 2000 when all of the computer registers were to turn over and the end of the world was going to come and we'd have train accidents and wrecks and everything. And at that time I was working in a telecommunications company, and they went around and they had meetings, and they never asked anybody who was knowledgeable. They had their meetings and they wrote the emails and they were all prepared, and nothing happened. The millennium bug never happened. And I remember the next day in the office, the vice president, this woman who thought she was knowledgeable, excuse me, I won't even go there, but she comes waltzing through going, "It was just like we planned. Nothing happened." And they had the whole company working on that night. It was New Year's Eve. The whole company had to be on duty, and nothing happened. And, it was just absolutely incredible. But anyway, cybersecurity is one of the least understood areas of anything. I mean, talk about weather, talk about, understanding how the Russians think, how the Latin Americans think. You know, people have no clue about anything, but cybersecurity even less. And so you have presidents, you have people in positions of high power who have absolutely no clue what is going on at all. So is there a way, let me ask you, or let me ask, you would ask me this, is there a way to secure computing in your home computer, in your telephone? Yes, there is, but now they've gotten to the level where they actually have put the bugs, the spyware, right in the operating system of Windows, of Android. They are so full of bugs that watch your every move and chip off all your information, all of your downloadable programs today. When you go through the checkoff list to accept them, WhatsApp is one of the worst ones. Now Skype is becoming terrible. They load your computer with spyware, and they tell you. They said, we have to get into all your friends, all your contacts, all of your pictures. Everything in your telephone is fair game. And then they say they're not responsible for any third-party activity that would do damage to you. And you have to sign off on this before you download any of these applications into your smartphone or tablet or computer. It's absurd. So they've gone way beyond. So if you buy, say, you buy the best security software for your computer, that's a layer above, or five layers above, where the real spyware is existing. So that works right through all of the so-called security software that you would buy. All that security software is doing is preventing so-called other hackers. But now other hackers have access, and this is the problem. Here's the crux of the issue. The hackers know where all of these access points are that the NSA uses. So they can get into your device. It's like walking in, like taking candy from a baby. And so when they asked Julian Assange if it was easy, he just kind of laughed. It was like, this is, and he's WikiLeaks. Julian Assange is the guy who founded WikiLeaks. Over 10 million emails and documents released, sensitive government documents that show corruption at an extremely high level. And I saw an interview with Assange, and who was it? I think it was Hannity, was asking him about his rationale for doing this. And he said he believes in honesty. He says it's a philosophical issue. He said people can only make decisions based on information they have, and the governments are hiding information at a very high level, so people are unable to make informed decisions. Look at the important documents. Look at what we're learning about the Clinton Foundation, the Democratic National Convention. The heads of the DNC all had to quit because of WikiLeaks releasing data showing them in their corruption. The corruption in the Obama administration and the Clinton State Department, the level of corruption in other governments, the false accusations that Russia is behind this, even that you're able to see who is actually behind all of this. And now understand the contradiction here. If Russia was hacking into our most sensitive databases or into the Democratic National Convention and exposing this, why wasn't the head of Homeland Security, and they're claiming that they recognized this after the fact, that they had said, yes, definitely it was Russia. Well, why didn't they identify it at the time and stop it? They're admitting their own incompetence. Do you see? The cybersecurity in the United States is non-existent. There is none, because you have a bunch of buffoons running around D.C. that don't know what they're doing, let alone presidents and other people in political offices. They know even less. And then you have people intentionally putting secure, what should be secure information, which is very vulnerable. They were saying that even the secure servers have hundreds of attacks every day that they're trying to fend off. And, you know, they're depending on secure software, cybersecurity from companies that are supposedly experts. But I can tell you something from being in that industry, not a single one of them are experts. They're a bunch of idiots that don't know what they're doing. They're selling a product and they don't want to tell anybody it doesn't work, because if they did, they would be admitting their own incompetence. So right now, their attack is against people like Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks. First of all, trying to set him up with a $1 million bribe. It was first a money-making scam, trying to get him to accept money from Russia. But it was a false Russian plant set up by the State Department of the U.S., to try and lure him into accepting money from so-called Russia. That failed. He smelt that a mile away. Now they're trying to pawn off the idea that he was a pedophile. And when they go in and find the company that had the dating service where he was supposedly involved in pedophilia, it's Hillary Clinton's top aide who owns the company that this came out of. I mean, it's just the circus, the merry-go-round that's going on here is just incredible. But cybersecurity, it doesn't exist. Doesn't exist for you, doesn't exist for the government. And your future very much depends on cybersecurity. You have wars being started over this, and the real problem is that there's no cybersecurity. Total incompetence. So instead of firing the people, and then you have people like Patrick Kennedy trying to bribe the FBI and change the classification of secure emails to non-secure to get Hillary Clinton off the hook. I mean, this is just pure insanity, pure insanity. I have about a minute left on this show. Once again, remind you, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Water filters, nothing like it on the planet. We finally have gotten caught up on the imperial filters. We got way behind in September. We finally caught up, and we have now excess on the shelves ready to ship. The imperials are the double wide, two times the flow rate, four times the lifetime, and sold in 10 packs, very economical. They fit any water filter out there, gravity water filter marketed in the last 20 years. And also my books, CDs, DVDs, my Recalendar Sunstar clock is there, posters for students, etc. And like I said, it's been a little slow lately because of all the political stuff. People are really walking around scared. And remember my paid cast. Very important. Every week, a deep dive. This week, once again, Tesla dealing with his secret weapon on the day he died, the one he was selling to London. Secret information that I have being released on this week's paid cast. $3.95 a month. Subscription buttons on my homepage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.